Welcome to TechNet Radio, your guide to the IT universe.
Hello and welcome back to TechNet Radio. This is our show for February 13th, 2007. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'm Aurora Queen. This week we bring back Blaine Barton to continue the discussion on group policy. And today we're talking about AGPM, or Advanced Group Policy Management. Blaine will be speaking with Kevin Sullivan. He's a lead program manager for group policy, and Winnie Verhoff, and he's a senior product manager, and he's focused on the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack and the underlying components of AGPM. So they'll discuss how AGPM increases administrators' control over managing group policy objects. And then after that, we'll have Kai Axford and Mark Griesi discussing the February Security Bulletin. First, here's Blaine Barton with Kevin Sullivan and Winnie Verhoff on TechNet Radio.
Welcome to TechNet Radio. I'm Blaine Barton, an IT pro evangelist here in Florida, and today we're going to have a deeper discussion around advanced group policy management for Windows and how it benefits enterprise customers. Advanced group policy management is one of the core technologies in the optimization pack, and we thought it'd be beneficial to give you a more in-depth view about the benefits and the capabilities of this technology. With me today, I have Kevin Sullivan, lead program manager for group policy, and Winnie Verhoff, product manager for Windows Vista. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Thanks, Blaine.
So, Winnie, for starters, what is group policy?
Right, Blaine. Let's start with the basics. So, group policy allows customers to make little tweak settings on a desktop, or even bigger if they like to. Some examples that explain what we're talking about would be the settings for your firewall, or the settings for your screensaver. So, basically anything that the user has on their desktop.
Okay. That makes sense to me. So, what is Advanced Group Policy Management, and what does it do?
So Microsoft Advanced Group Policy Management increases administrators' control over managing group policy objects. For added change management of GPOs, the group policy objects, and role-based delegation, the desktop is more easily controlled, resulting in less downtime for the customers from conflict or improperly configured GPOs. Think of it as this. It allows robust workflow management. It allows offline editing options. It has an archive history, and it provides rollback mechanisms.
Okay, so four simple things, really.
Four simple things, exactly.
So Kevin, can you tell me a little bit about each of those? You know, for instance, workflow management, and what does it actually do for us?
Sure. So workflow management essentially allows you to delegate control over how to set GPOs to another administrator, how to allow other administrators to be able to manage GPOs in one capacity or another. A good example is it may be administrator one's job to make changes to the group policy objects, but they're not allowed to push those into the production environment. Within advanced group policy management, that first administrator or our editor can edit this GPO, and when they say that they're done and they want to push it live, it initiates this workflow process where it generates an email to an approver, it puts the GPO in a state that's ready to be acted upon by another admin who has those higher rights. So the workflow piece is a pretty major part of the whole process.
Okay, so can you limit what level of authority you have and how you manage that and who has the approval authority over changes that they make?
Yeah, we tried to, and I think we did a very good job at making this as simple as possible. We wanted to implement a role-based delegation mechanism, essentially, and the roles are pretty evident. We have a role called an approver. That would be one that can approve, and they actually can say, okay, those changes are good, and they're ready to go, and they click the button to deploy it, and it will go into production. We have a role called an editor, which is simply one who is going to edit the GPOs in their offline state. It covers this whole issue around without advanced group policy management, when you open up a group policy object for editing, that setting takes effect in production immediately. There's no mechanism to say, oh, I didn't really want that to happen. I like to tell people there is not a this could be a career-limiting configuration choice button that pops up. It just happens. So the editor edits, and then they check it back in so that an approver could approve it. Another role that we have is called a reviewer, and it's more of an auditing-type role. and they're going to have the ability to look at reports and make sure that everything is on track, everything is in line with my corporate objectives and what have you. And then, of course, there's an Uber role, sort of a full control role over the whole environment. So we really knocked it down to just four, which made it very simple.
Oh, okay. So that makes sense. So also, would it automatically send me an email or let me know that there was something pending my approval?
Absolutely. It's going to send you an email that you'll pick up any, you know, just using SMTP, you'll pick it up with any mail client. But we also have a container in the Advanced Group Policy Management console called Pending. So it has it sitting, it has the action sitting in a pending state waiting for your action, essentially.
Okay. So I can understand workflow management. What about offline editing?
So offline editing is another big piece. It's a very important piece. It's a big differentiator between how we do things today within the GPMC, the Group Policy Management Console. Right now, when I open up the Management Console, I am looking at my production environment. When I right-click on a GPO and choose Edit, I am editing the live instance. Any change that I make is reflected in live immediately. So with Advanced Group Policy Management, we have this offline archive. And I essentially will check a GPO out. I'll go through my process of editing, and then I'll check it back into the archive when I'm done my editing, and then it would be reviewed, and then someone could approve that to go into production. So this offline piece is really the major piece that helps me protect my environment, make sure errant changes don't get out there, which could have negative effects on my customer systems or what have you. It's a very important part of the whole product.
So that's great. So thanks for covering, you know, the workflow management piece. I guess the next one would be then is versioning.
Yeah, versioning is important, right? Because we have this rich archive now, and which means I no longer have just my one group policy object. I have every historical reference of that group policy object since it was created. So I have to be able to quickly look at a GPO and say, show me the entire history and what has changed. And what we did in Advanced Group Policy Management was we built the versioning to map to the same way the Group Policy Management Console does versioning today. So it's very similar, it's very familiar for admins. And then, of course, there's time and date stamps, and there's all the other data associated with the historical version to help you reference exactly what it is.
So that really gives you a great report, huh, for everything that you need going forward.
It's an excellent record. It's fantastic. And to be able to go in and see, you know what, last January I made a change to this GPO here, but one of my colleagues made a change in March, and that's the one that really messed up everyone's machine. It's nice to be able to track that all the way back.
So versioning is very important, and so what I want to know a little bit more about is you mentioned a rollback. Does this mean that if you have that history that I could roll back to any of those known states previous?
Exactly. So when I look at the history of the GPO, everything is a valid line item, and I could roll back to any state. So if somehow something got through the process that deployed an errant change and it caused some problems, I could go to my history and say, this was a good time, no one was complaining at this point, and I could roll back to that state, and then everyone's good to go. So rollback ties right into history very well.
That sounds like really like some amazing things for our customers. And so one of the questions that I have frequently been asked is what's the difference between what Microsoft Windows, you know, Server already has with Active Directory and the GPMC, and what is the Advanced Group Policy Management? I mean, it sounds like from what you were describing that really it's a number of these things. Can you articulate specifically that difference?
Yeah, let me take that one, Kevin.
A couple of things
we already went over. But the difference is really the way that it provides workflow management, which is totally absent in the current GPMC. The offline editing, the fact that you have to do it in a live environment, if you just have Active Directory right now, you don't have any way to see what has been done before, how the GPOs have been touched by other administrators, and you don't have any way to roll it back or to restore it to a previous state after you've put something in your live environment.
Okay, so Winnie, why would this be important to our customers? You know, what's the business value there?
Well, it assures increased GPO control and reduces downtime that was previously associated with conflict and improperly configured GPOs. And in the end, of course, you know, what's always important to our customers, it leads to a lower total cost of ownership. Apart from helping to drive down the cost, it also helps compliance. So So many enterprises nowadays have something to do with policy regulations like SOX or the HIPAA, the HIPAA. So with the group policies, they can assure that they are compliant.
Okay. So how can the customer focus on the core issue of managing the desktop?
Well, chances are they are already focusing on these core issues, right? And they have manual workarounds in place to deal with them right now. They can save time by enabling them in an automated way with a consolidated management product. And they can really get in control of the desktop by providing them with this tool that allows them to create or edit GPOs without having to test them in a live environment. They may be doing that right now in a lab environment, which is really expensive to maintain. Or they may just go with trial and error, and occasionally it totally disrupts the user experience. That's going to be really expensive for them.
Great. So thanks, Winnie. So back to Kevin. Question for him was, really, what are the specific pain points that we would address with this?
Well, essentially, there's a couple. One is you have companies with hundreds of group policy objects and with multiple group policy administrators located all over the place, whether it's all over the country or the globe or whatever. They're going to benefit by requiring change. They're going to be able to use AGPM to make sure they have good workflow process for managing their group policy objects, and it's going to just give them a more efficient way to sort of control that entire environment.
So that's like if you have a really complicated environment, right? With you have lots of people in the IT department and they're spread out all over the place. That really helps you.
It really does. I do have to say, though, that some of the value in the product, you're going to find that smaller, less complicated companies find value there as well. But for those larger, complex environments, it's almost a requirement to get to the place where you can manage change over time.
Okay.
So the second one would be essentially ensure that group policy objects are configured right before they're placed into production. This was all of the offline editing and the history maintenance, whatever. And it really cuts down on our risks for errors. And we need to be able to reduce the risk. The third piece would probably be help ensure that management is done securely, and as a result, it helps ensure compliancy. Winnie was mentioning some of this stuff. It helps ensure that we know what's going on and we actually can determine where or when a change was made and how it got out there.
Okay, so what are the three things I want customers to remember?
Well, I would guess it would be system is offline. The second would be recovery and rollback, and the third would be workflow management, the ability to actually control the whole system.
Okay, that's great, Kevin. So back to Winnie, who is the product really for?
Well, this is important for any customer using group policy, customers concerned with compliancy or customers who need more efficient process in order to save time.
Okay, so what's new in relation to Windows Vista?
Well, the fact that this is part of MDOP, the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack for Software Assurance, and it's tied with Windows Vista. Remember that with Windows Vista, we introduced many more settings. The total number of manageable settings have gotten around 3,000, and that is a lot to manage. It gives them great control over the desktop, but it also gives them some challenges of how to manage that. And with AGPM, they are able to search through those thousands of settings and to build their own templates off of that.
Okay, so what do I need Vista, or what if my environment is mostly XP?
Well, to run AGPM, the tool itself, you need a Windows Vista machine, or you can terminal service into a Windows Server 2003 box. What you run on your clients is really irrelevant as long as you can manage them through group policy settings. You know, so Windows XP, if you have a large environment with Windows XP machines, this tool can still be a great tool to help you manage those machines.
Okay, so how do I get AGPM?
That's a good one. So the only way that you can get AGPM is through MDOP. So I mentioned that before. MDOP stands for Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. It is available only to software assurance customers. So you need a volume license, and you need to have Windows client with software assurance. And only then you get access to acquire MDOP for really small extra prices. I think it's less than $10 per desktop per year. It not only consists of AGPM, it also has Softricity, the software to virtualize your applications. It has Dart, what we call Dart, for advanced desktop recovery tools. And it has AIS for inventory management. And, you know, the best way I can, in this radio talk, I can point to customers is to go to our website and pick it up from there. I would love to give a URL, but our website just recently underwent a great change. So I would just suggest that they type in Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack, and I'm pretty sure they'll find the right page.
Well, that's excellent, and thanks for the excellent information, gentlemen. Well, that concludes our discussion around AGPM, and I want to thank Kevin Sullivan, Lead Program Manager for Group Policy, and Winnie Verhoff, Product Manager of Windows Vista. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Once again, this is Blaine Barton, IT professional here in Florida. I want to thank you for tuning in to TechNet Radio.
Blaine Barton interviewing Kevin Sullivan and Winnie Verhoff on TechNet Radio. Remember, if you'd like to check out any Group Policy webcasts, visit Microsoft.com/events/series/grouppolicy.mspx. Next up is the monthly security bulletin for February. Here's Kai Axford and Mark Griesu.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to today's February update, and we are going to be talking today. I'm Mark Griesu from the Microsoft Security Response Center. My name is Kai Axford. I'm a senior security strategist with the Trustworthy Computing team, and we are here today to kind of sit around and chat about what we can expect tomorrow in these releases. So, Mark, you want to tell us how many we're looking at this week?
So we are looking at a total of 12 bulletins that are being released that span a few of the products. Those bulletins will address 20 vulnerabilities, and we have five of those that are going to affect Windows Server 2003 SP1 as well as R2. And we have seven of those that will address bulletins from Windows XP SP2, and we have one that will address an IE7 bulletin.
Okay, now I'm actually at the Windows Vista launch getting ready here in Houston, Texas, getting ready to start this thing tomorrow. So please tell me that there's nothing in Vista I need to be worried about.
There are no vulnerabilities in Vista, so there's no bulletins being released on that. There is a bulletin that's going to be released. It's MSO7010 that is a vulnerability in the antivirus engine. And that is the engine that we use across all of our anti-malware products, including Defender. And as you know, Kai, a version of Defender does ship with Windows Vista. So that version of Defender does have this vulnerability, and there will be an update that is done for that version of Defender.
Okay. So can you tell me a little bit more about this and what product it affects? You say it's a Microsoft anti-malware engine. Are we talking about, like, you know, Windows Live 1Tera? What are we talking about? What are we covering here?
Yes, that is basically the answer to your question. The products that this addresses are basically all of our anti-malware products. So, for instance, the antivirus engine that we use is used across all of our anti-malware products. So the Defender, OneCare, the Forefront Security products. Now, those are out currently only in beta, but since some of our folks are using beta, we do send out updates to beta products, and they are all the versions of those products as well. So Defender, for instance, has a version that runs on Windows XP SP2. There's also a 64-bit version of Defender. And as I said, there's a version of Defender that is shipped with Windows Vista as well.
So I know everybody, all the bad guys out there are trying to be the first guy to make his mark on Windows Vista, and this is basically not that opportunity then.
No, this is not a direct vulnerability in Windows Vista or any of the OSs. This is a vulnerability in the engine, which is a component of software that runs on the OS. So while it is an attack vector, it is not a OS vulnerability.
Okay, I gotcha. And we're going to do it a little bit different this week, everybody, over this month. We're going to spend some time, and as opposed to us just reading you all this information, all these vectors, there's a lot of questions and answers. It's been a big month for security. So we want to just address some of those issues that you may have heard about. And, Mark, maybe you can talk to some of these points, and hopefully we can get some answers here. You know, we've all heard about the zero day in Word and Office in the past few months. What's going on there? Can you give us an update on that situation?
So we have released bulletins to address the majority of the zero days that are out there. They are all articulated in the bulletin, so the word zero days that we've had are addressed. There were a number of zero-day reports that came out that were thought to be new zero days, when in fact the majority of all of those were actually just variants of the current exploits that were out there, and those were identified and then reported back to the finders that they weren't, in fact, actually new ones.
great. So one of the big features in Windows Vista that I'm a huge fan of, I know some people aren't, is the UAC, user account control, which some people say, you know, I've heard some of the security experts, so-called experts, talk about, you know, it's too chatty, it's a real hassle. As I mention to people all the time, you know, so is going through an airport security line, right? But we still do that. Kind of talk about one of the things that USA really helps mitigate is this thing I heard about called the speech recognition vulnerability. It's a so-called Vista vulnerability, which I really don't think it is. But could you talk a little bit more about this whole, you know, in case some of the people in the audience have heard anything about this speech recognition?
So what that was really about, Kai, is that, you know, Windows Vista, there was an additional change to the speech recognition in Windows Vista from that of XP. So in XP, there was speech recognition that was it was mainly used for an accessibility feature to allow you to open up a Word document, let's say, and use different types of inputs to get information into the Word document, one of them being speech. So you could, you know, speak to the Word document and it would, you know, type what you said, for instance. Now, the difference in Windows Vista is that we added the ability to do actual commands. So you could speak to your computer and say, you know, open control panel or, you know, open command prompt and actually do command functions through speech as well. And this is to allow you to literally navigate your system using speech and not have speech just a means to input, you know, text into a document, for instance. So it was brought up in a blog that, you know, if you went to a website and, you know, or got emailed a, you know, an audio file, that in theory, if you had your speakers turned up loud enough and your speech recognition was turned on, and of course you had to have a mic and et cetera, that, you know, someone could send you an audio file or a website could play an audio file that could start literally talking to your computer. And then speech recognition potentially could pick that up and then start executing those commands. Now, the thing about that is that because we've added this command feature, then in theory someone could say, you know, open command prompt, you know, format C colon backslash. So that was actually the concern. And but a few things to note about that is that, you know, you're not by default exposed to this. So speech recognition is off by default. Even through IE, which can actually instantiate speech recognition, you would literally have to go through the setup process in order to get this to work. So a user couldn't automatically, you know, attack you and set your system up. And even so, if you had speech recognition turned on, you still would have to have your speakers turned up. You still would have to have a lot of factors come into play. But as well, you know, the computer's not going to do anything that you don't have rights to, and this kind of goes to your UAC question, is that, you know, unless I had rights to do certain things, just because someone started speaking to my computer isn't going to make it so to speak.
Right, so you're saying, so UAC, basically, the user not only would have to have all the speakers turned up and the microphone plugged in and clicking on a WAV file that has all these commands issued, he'd also have to, when got prompted to elevate his privilege as admin, he basically have to go ahead and allow that to happen every single time something happened.
Correct.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, I've heard that now, remote control, I heard there might be some vulnerabilities in Windows Mobile out there, is that true? I mean, we just released Mobile 6 yesterday. You know, what's the deal there? Can you tell me a little bit about that? Is it true? Is it false? Fact or fiction?
So there have been reports that we're investigating of a couple of vulnerabilities in Windows Mobile, and that has to do with the Internet Explorer and Windows Mobile, as well as Windows Mobile Picture and Video. So they were reported to us. We've not had any reports of anybody actually attempting to use these vulnerabilities, but you know, we are working to address these, and then as well work with our OEM to provide updates to their customers. So, you know, as most folks don't realize, Windows Mobile actually gets updated through the OEM, so there's not a current mechanism, for instance, like XP or Vista has, where you can actually get updates directly from Microsoft. So folks should look for those updates from their cell providers.
Okay, great. And last question. Again, being a security guy, I tend to live on the ragged edge of paranoia sometimes, and so, you know, I heard rumor from some of the back channels that Microsoft had some super secret ninja discussion, you know, some backdoor meeting with some security vendors. Can you tell me anything about that meeting, or if that actually happened?
So it did actually happen. It wasn't, I wouldn't necessarily call it super secret. But yeah, there is a community out there that is the Internet Security Operations and Intelligence group, and Microsoft is a participant of that group, and as well as a lot of other security vendors in the industry. So Microsoft was asked, could we host a workshop here on campus?
And so they're just looking for some room, huh?
Yep. And I want to say that Cisco hosted it last time, but Microsoft volunteered to host it this time and provide the venue. And I mean, it is a closed meeting, but it is not a super secret meeting. So Microsoft didn't summon a bunch of folks here for a meeting.
And everybody knows you guys have the best muffins in Redmond anyway. So
that's very true.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all we really have for this month. We'll look forward to talking to you guys next month on the March briefing. And don't forget to check out Christopher Budd's webcast tomorrow. We're going to talk about all the great things. He's going to go to great detail about all those vulnerabilities and specific exploits, all that kind of really deep technical stuff. But again, thank you, Mark. I appreciate your time. And we'll see you guys next month.
Thank you, Kai.
And that was our monthly security bulletin here on TechNet Radio. If you'd like to check out the Security Bulletin webcast, that's tomorrow, Wednesday, February 14th at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And I put the direct link to that up on our site, microsoft.com/TNradio, or you can visit microsoft.com/webcasts. We got some great feedback this last week, so keep it coming. Our email address here is tnradio@microsoft.com. Thanks as always for tuning in. I look forward to next week. For our entire team here at TechNet Radio, I'm Aurora Queen.
Have comments or want to request a story idea? Call us at 1-877-814-6506.